Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 44, section 6, which is old single column, page 506. All right. So we'll be going through the last of these seven primary divisions of the celestial artisans. And before we get to these last two here, this session, wanted to just drop you back for a moment to something that that we read back in section 4 and didn't get a chance to comment on. If you look back in section 4 there, the fourth group of those thought recorders, I recall the promoters of oratory there. I just want to read you again that second paragraph about the promoters of oratory and note something that, like I said, that we didn't bring up at the time. So it says, "The oratory of the spirit world is one of the rare treats which await you who have heard only the crude and stumbling orations of Urantia. There is harmony of music and euphony of expression in the orations of Salvington and Indentia, which are inspiring beyond description. These burning concepts are like gems of beauty and diadems of glory. But I cannot do it. I cannot convey to the human mind the breadth and depth of these realities of another world." Remember how we commented on the how many exclamation points can you put forward? And you'll see as we get into what we're reading tonight, he picks right up on that again about how almost impossible this is to try to relate these issues to us in any way that, you know, is from his perspective genuine. All right, but the thing that I wanted you to note there that you might not have thought of is the positive element there. I mean, you know, this statement that there is harmony of music and euphony of expression in the orations of Salvington and Indentia, which are inspiring beyond description. That's what the oratory of Lucifer on Gerizim was like, remember. You know, it's so easy to fall into thinking, you know, of Lucifer or Satan or Caligastia in some sort of a historical, anthropomorphic, materialistic mode, where there wouldn't be anything that would be appealing to your spiritual consciousness. I mean, the depictions are always, you know, of something, you know, that is just horrendous to your positive spiritual consciousness, and only the totally debased find, you know, this, you know, evil phenomenon compelling. You know, remember, it's the complete opposite. It's opposite of that beyond our wildest imagination. When he's, if you were to hear him speak, you would be completely mesmerized. He would completely incapacitate any critical thinking you have. You know, you would be putty in his hands, right? I mean, he would just, his sound of his voice, you know, independent of what he was saying, you know, independent of the details of the spiritual candy that he's doling out, would be completely irresistible. You know, your spiritual consciousness would be your complete undoing, in the midst of his oratory. When you're thinking about, the glories of the celestial artisans here, don't forget that side of it. Why it was that the rebellion was so effective. Why countless celestial beings of countless millions of years of experience, under their belts, were completely seduced by this. Because they would have, he's system sovereign, okay? He has command of all this stuff. He would have ordered the full orchestration of what he was up to. You would have been immersed planet-wide on Gerizim, an incredible glory of symphony. All seven groups of all seven, elements, divisions that we're reading about here. Think of some incredible thing. So how profound it is, why the word would have gone out that not a single ascender on Gerizim fell for that, even though, a lot of them hadn't fused yet. Because, even in that limited nature, because they had an adjuster and because they had that bit of experience that they had to get to Gerizim, that was enough. But, millions of times more experience, was not enough without an adjuster for countless celestial beings. And it's, the independent of all of this majesty of, the environment that they would have produced. I mean, the very words, too, would have been such a clever sophistry that it would trip up any ability for you to, just think around it, with any ease. But you can just think about how most of these beings couldn't get to that point where they could try to apply their logical, critical analysis and pick through his words. They're just immediately, all of that is just shut down. All of that ability to engage it critically by this incredible presentation that he would have put forward. Now, how long the full majesty of it would have gone on, I don't know. I mean, obviously, the more he speaks, the more people would start taking sides over those 2 years. But, the initial trumpet blast of the announcement would have been one heck of a quote-unquote trumpet blast. Yeah. You had something?
How was it that the no ascenders fell into the sophistry?
How is it that the whom?
The no ascenders.
The non-ascenders?
Ascenders.
Oh, wait.
Why did no...
How does it no ascenders fell in? Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Is it just the presence of the adjuster?
Right, I mean, again, all kinds of ascenders prior to Gerizim fell victim. But the whole point was none of them that had made it as far as Gerizim citizenship fell victim.
Okay.
It's that key that that much experience plus having an adjuster was adequate. But there were probably a few on the seventh mansion world, that fell victim. You could assume. There has to be lots and lots that fell victim on the first mansion world. Right? And then they tried to go to the probationary nursery too, I remember. But yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because now you think about the war in heaven. So if Lucifer had been this way, I can imagine what Gabriel must have been like giving his side of the story. Something that would have just been even more
He would try to reinforce the full harmony that is, and challenge people. Think about it. Think about this harmony. Don't just get sucked into it and lost into it. Think about it. How could there be the potential for this kind of harmony if there isn't something above us, if there isn't a hierarchy above us? How could it be, as Lucifer is saying, that it's all just at the eye level that we're at? And people who say they're above us are actually just at our level, and they falsely have exalted themselves.
The grandeur of his expression of that versus Lucifer.
Right. He could make the case for God the sevenfold, you know, Gabriel, in contrast to the God of liberty, he could make the case for God the sevenfold with all kinds of sevenfold, see, glory. Sevens upon sevens. He would have tried to really bring out, you know, why is it that seven subgroups of designers and embellishers produces this glory? If there isn't some pattern on high that, you know, allows for that. I mean, see, so all of this would just really build his case for God the sevenfold. You know, and, you know, and again, remind yourself, that sevenfoldness of God the sevenfold is not like the sevenfoldness of the seven super universes. Okay? It's a different sevenfold. It's a seven that's within the Trinity, not within the relationship of the three persons. You know, the relationships of the three persons. You know, it's an even more, in many ways, profound sevenfoldness, because it's not so immediately deducible, scientifically, you know, discoverable by the celestials. You know, that the unseen Trinity and Mother presence can be made to sing in sevenfold. It can be brought out of the, you know, the invisible state and manifested, right? You know, and see, so you can use that to demonstrate that there is a whole, and there is an individuality of the whole. We aren't just a bunch of parts that can demand the assertion of the self of that part. You know, like Lucifer was claiming. He was claiming there was no whole and no individuality of the whole. Right? At least on a level beyond in play in the local universe. But again, remember, this is happening 200,000 years ago. The creative Mother Spirit wasn't as definitively tangible to even celestial beings until 2,000 years ago. See, so he could still play upon that. You know, they say there's something that's ubiquitous, but can you poke it? You can't, can you? Right, you're being deceived. Right? You know, he can play upon that. Right, so, you know, that's a real key thing, you know, that is in play here when you think about all of this majesty and whether or not you could stand unmoved against the abuse of all this harmony. All right. So let's get into the rest of it here, and like I said, you'll see right off the bat he's reminding us of our lowly animal origin nature.
Six, the designers and embellishers. How I wish I knew how to portray the exquisite work of these unique artisans. Every attempt on my part to explain the work of spirit embellishment would only recall to material minds your own pitiful but worthy efforts to do these things on your world of mind and matter.
Okay, so it's interesting as we get closer to the end. I mean, you notice when you look to the next section, there isn't seven subgroups even listed. It's becoming harder and harder for him to even attempt something. So it's kind of interesting that these are called designers and embellishers, because as we go through these seven groups of so-called designers and embellishers, you have to almost completely try to somehow embellish upon what he says to get anything out of it. I'll comment on the details as we get into it. You'll see that it's pretty sparse, anything that you can get your hands on. Okay, now, he's gentle at times, you know, and like we've pointed out, he doesn't say grotesque every time, but But, you know, it's effectively there. It's pitiful. You know, the only difference is there's an understanding that what to them is grotesque doesn't appear as such to us. It seems really cool to us. You know, and so, you know, they look on you like a simple-minded little child as you are, you know, and it's pitiful how immature we are. But again, remember, we stress this, you know, and notice, see, it doesn't just say pitiful. It says pitiful but worthy. Remember what's pitiful, what's grotesque. It's not what you might be able to have in an initial relationship to truth. That's not pitiful or grotesque or whatever. It's just factually. Factually, it is pitiful, you know, what's going on between our ears. But there's a thin thread, if by no other reason grace, a thin thread of potential, at least, for truth in an earnest effort on our part. So it can be a worthy effort. But you might want to note that he didn't say valuable effort, he said worthy effort. You know, value is a spirit word. And when you think about such a nature downstepped so that it's directly engaged to the material, to individuality, that's what the word worth means. If you want to use the words value and worth properly, don't go to the dictionary. They might even tell you the opposite. You know, value is the spirit word. Things, meanings, and values, and worth and worthy, worthiness, etc. You know, that's indicating some relationship to the material, the individuality. Okay. okay. So it's a truth that's tied to fact. You know, that he's kind of invoking by using that word. You know, this tenuous little initial budding relationship to truth that we just might have in the midst of the pitiful awareness of any of this factually. Okay, so why don't you read the preface in number one there.
This core, while embracing over 1,000 subdivisions of activity, is grouped under the following seven major heads. Number one, the craft workers of color. These are they who make the 10,000 color tones of spirit reflection peel forth their exquisite messages of harmonious beauty. Aside from color perception, there is nothing in human experience to which these activities may be compared.
Okay, now, so you notice right away at the first one, I said, wait a minute, haven't we already done this? Haven't they already talked about the craft workers of color? You know, for instance, if you go back, you know, to the celestial musicians in number one, they talked about color symphonies, you know, melody of Marantia color tones. This ranks among the highest accomplishments of the celestial musicians, et cetera. You know, we've talked about color already. I mean, he's talking about something that is really so subtle that he can't speak directly to it at all. But you do know that in some way, it's some higher harmonic, if you will, that goes back to the color issue in some, like he's saying, at least rudimentary, crude way. The only thing that we could remotely relate to this, what he's talking about. So, you know, just basically, you know, recognize that if we can't even understand what the raw material is like, we're certainly not going to have any ability to understand an embellishment, you know, putting cherries upon the top of some construct. So that's just not available to us, the immediacy of designing and embellishing. But you know, so you go through this list, and you're going to see he's doing his best to point out that you have certain phenomena on high, and they get downstepped all the way to our lowly corporeal nature. You know, the five normal senses that we think of having don't originate from the bottom up. They're the most downstepped expressions of that which is on high. And so, you know, you'll see, pardon the pun, a sight, you know, one here, a hearing one, a smelling one, you know, et cetera. And so, you know, when you think about this, it's like, well, if I take away all the facts of my sight, you know, all the immediate facts of my sight, but in some way try to just think about some sort of a transcendent essence of how I'm of the consciousness of sight in my mind, not what I'm seeing or how I'm seeing or anything like that, but just in some way how sight transcendently feels, and then how a smell transcendently feels, you know, independent of any material details or specificity. That might get you to the beginnings of, you know, at least sensing the groups here, the seven groups. Obviously, we're not going to get anywhere in the over 1,000 subdivisions of activity, right? But maybe we could get some rudimentary sniff, again, pardon the pun, of the seven groups. Now, he is going to try to take an opportunity to get us to think about some pattern issues that we can relate to, even if we can't relate to the harmony directly. These are they who make the 10,000 color tones of spirit reflection. So, I mean, that should get your curiosity going. I mean, you should be able to figure out why it's 10,000 and not 100,000 or 10 or whatever. I mean, they've given you enough that you can think that one through. So think about this. Notice he's brought in this issue. It's not of spirit nature or something, but spirit reflection is the term he uses. Color tones of spirit reflection. So you think about, I have some sort of a unity or spirit source on high, and that's beaming, quote unquote, down. You notice he uses that sort of peeling, verb, beaming down and reflecting off of that which is below it. Okay, so, you know, what could this be he's talking about? What's the 10,000-foldness that's in play? How many local systems are in a local universe? No.
Oh, sorry.
There's 100 constellations in a local universe. There's 10,000, right? Because there's 100 local systems in a constellation. 100 constellations in a local universe. There's 10,000 local systems in a local universe. Okay? Now, why is that significant? How did the whole celestial artisan thing get started? Remember, what beings started this whole celestial artisan core up? Havona natives. Yeah, Havona natives. Right? So, remember what the basic pattern is. Each local system is related to one of the Havona worlds. Right? You know, you have 7 billion local systems. You know, you take one Havona world where you have that non-downstepped unity in the central universe, and then you downstep that in sevenfold fashion so that one Havona world becomes a sevenfold pattern for seven local systems, one in each super universe. So think about that. That you have that each local universe, I mean, each local system in a local universe, each local system in a local universe has a unique expression of Havona harmony that it's striving to, through evolution, to begin to manifest. Right? And you are playing that 10,000-fold harmony, that 10,000-fold instrument. You know, each is a unique tone, right, in the local universe. know, each local universe, like we've been saying, is a unity on the top, associativity at the constellation level, individuality at the local system level. You have a particular flavor of, you know, even further downstepped unity at the top of each local universe. Okay. There is a spirit, a unique spirit nature to each local universe. You know, the literalness of the spirit is the creative mother spirit, but its uniqueness, one local universe to another, comes from her coordination with the creator sun. Because all the creative spirits start out the same in a super universe, all flavored by one master spirit, but each takes on, in coordinate fashion with the creator sun, a unique, you know, different, a unique expression in each local universe. So you have this particular flavor of spirit, quote unquote, if you will, in the local universe, right? And so each local universe has a different set of 10,000 color tones. Right? So think of the incredible harmony we're heading towards, you know, with the super universe. Once you get all the local universes up to the super universe level, so they can play together. Right? Right now, we can't play with those that are up there. We're, you know, our local universe is way down in the, you know, beginnings yet. We're a long ways up from being able to play, you know, in any sort of a symphony with those local universes that have made it up to the super universe level and are settled in line life. We're a long, long ways from it. But one day, all these 10,000-fold symphonies will play together. Right, in a final billion-fold, right, symphony. And of course, it'll be times seven, too. So all 70 super universes will play together. That's what you're striving for. But it begins with this specialization. And see, when I went to all that, because, see, if you think all that through like that, it's like, oh, you know, I haven't really thought about that specificity that there is to a local universe relative to spirit. So there could be this very subtle embellishing that would finely tune it, you know, even more precisely to this local universe. Right? If there wasn't that specificity, you know, if it was all just the same in each super universe, there would be a limit to how much you could embellish and have it be real.
This gives us a little bit of an expansion of understanding of what it's going to take for the Supreme.
Yeah. What kind of a synthesis we're talking about with the power personality synthesis. Yeah. Yeah, and we've already stressed as we've read into this that it's not just a personality harmony thing that's going on here. You know, there's just as much power as there is personality. See, it's the beginnings. They are, you know, why do they work so tirelessly on this? Because this is part of getting the grand universe settled in light and life. Everyone has to, through their effort, right, bring things up. You know, God the Supreme doesn't just reach down and drag a pile of ignorant, clueless, you know, do-nothings up to supremacy. We have to all be working, you know, transcendently in synchrony with that. So these laborers, you know, they struggle, we talked about this, they struggle for millions and millions of years and fail every time to do something they're trying to do. And finally, after 600 million years, ta-da, they got their first success or something. You know, could you be an artist that long, failing that long, tearing up your canvas, you know, for millions upon millions of years because it didn't resonate with anything, you know, and you just keep, you'd be all the more determined and precise and focused, you know, the next time.
We're on your coffee, kind of.
Right? We want to try to see. Notice how much I'm embellishing here. See, right? I'm trying to go beyond what's immediate here. Because if you just read this, it's like, okay, they didn't tell me anything. It's just a bunch of words that didn't really say anything, except he threw in some insults again. You know, and then you move on to the next section. Right? You gotta get in and try to get the spirit of what's going on, so you can feel the significance of these beings' efforts that are so transcendent of what we can immediately understand.
So you said something a minute ago about, you know, when we get to the Havana worlds coming from Jerusalem, you think we'll recognize which world is...
Well, yes.
Like our local
right. Yeah, we talked about system. That way back when we were doing the central universe. Yeah, just think about that. How cool. They're one of those... Those seven, one of those billion worlds, you know, is sort of a seventh, if you will, in some way of where you came from. There's going to be a resonance that you'll feel on one of those worlds that you won't feel on the other ones. That will tie back to your local system.
Right? Do the lottery
now. Yeah. So one of those worlds will forever be different for you personally than the others. All right.
Number two, the sound designers, spirit waves of diverse identity and Maranja appreciation are depicted by these designers of what you would call sound. These impulses are in reality the superb reflections of the naked and glorious spirit souls of the celestial hosts.
Okay, so here you see, okay, so we don't seem to be working so much, you know, with the raw material spirit, but, you know, this is, you can see there's going to be a lot about beings in this embellishment, okay, rather than just spirit substance, you know. A lot about the beings. And so here's kind of a foundational thing, the naked and glorious spirit souls of the celestial hosts. And, you know, and you notice how they added the spirit hyphen, you know, just to remind you that we're fundamentally playing with or off of the spirit substance. You know, the spirit nature of the Maranja is, you know, primary in this process, like we talked about. You know, and the other little thing he threw in is, you know, again, you go back, it's like, well, how is that different than the things we've seen here before? You know, you talked about spiritual sound up there in the celestial musicians, but there they said spirit current interruptions. And here he actually just goes much more like we would think, waves. So, you know, he's trying to pick words that indicate the subtlerness of it. You know, that bit of, it's one thing to have literal kind of individuation that you can think like it being interrupted, you know, like there's more than one note, you know, that you color in on a staff if you're, you know, writing down your music, you know, you have it divided into these, you know, interruptions, these notes. But, you know, a wave, you only have a wave in a continuum. Right, so if you see, you would be embellishing it with a point where the individuality begins to get so complex that you start to lose any, and it's almost as if it's a continuum, and then you can play that continuum. Right? See, that's why he's done that. I mean, see, and you gotta have a little bit of a scientific sense, you know, to know that you can't have a wave if you don't have a continuous medium. You know, you can have waves in the force charge of space because it's a continuum. Right? There's no breaks in it. It's not a collection of parts. Right? All right, that's his little attempt to, you know, get you to appreciate that this is some sort of final embellishment thing where it's not, you have a wholeness, and the continuumness of that wholeness can then be played upon, okay, in some way. Okay, but here certainly is, we had the sight, and we had the, you know, we had the seeing, and here we have the hearing. Okay.
Three, the emotion designers. These enhancers and conservators of feeling are those who preserve the sentiments of Maranja and the emotions of divinity for the study and edification of the children of time, and for the inspiration and beautification of Maranja progressors and advancing spirits.
Okay, so now you're getting a little hint about something that's kind of what's going on with this. This helping you to be beautiful. There's a lot about aesthetics to this one, you'll see, you know, the word aesthetics will come to mind, and beauty will come to mind as you reflect on what he says in these different ones. It's kind of a, as a sort of an overarching thought. And so think about this. You know, you, first you have the naked and glorious spirit souls, but then you've got the details, not just the mere fact of it. Literally, you have all of this, these artists helping you to form better mindful forms so that your feelings and emotions are more pleasing, more beautiful. They're actually helping you to improve how positive feeling feels by helping you to sand off the rough edges that take a little bit of the joy out of the feeling, that make it a little prickly for you in terms of your experience, or maybe your, no, I shouldn't say experience, your consciousness of it, how that, you know, what kind of a consciousness you have relative to that feeling. And then remember, you know, and you start to really see it here, we're not, you know, we're up there, we're not like we're here, like we are here, where I have to try to really infer and guess what's going on in your mind. You know, you're an open book. The higher you go, the more open book you are. Right? And so, you know, if you have a certain feeling, you're striving to not make people's stomachs upset when they see you. See, think about how this is an evolution of what we're saying about grotesque and pitiful and stuff. You know, it may feel positive to you, but that's a very relative experience. You're trying to get your nature more objective and less subjective. And the fact that people can see your feelings, not just you feeling your feelings, that helps you to get those feelings more objectively formed instead of just being satisfied with their initial subjective nature and sort of having everything conveniently conform to that, and you're happy and you never grow. You know, you have no dissatisfaction. But you'll feel dissatisfied with your very, not before, negative feeling, when others, you know, kind of go like, talk to you like this, while you're feeling glorious. It's like, why are you staring? You know, why are you turning your head? Well, it's a little harsh still. I'm sorry. Right? So just, you know, to think of you needing an artist to help you have better forms in your mind. You know, and the is purposely saying emotion too. It's not just feeling, but you know, we still will have this fact that some feelings are so powerful that they can't help but manifest in your, you know, the movements of your body or the, you know, in some sort of an outward nature of your body. You know, and like I was just saying, that the higher you go, the more open book you are. I mean, the distinction between feeling and emotion starts to disappear the higher you go. I mean, every feeling is an emotion when you're transparent, basically, and you're totally visible. You're emoting all the time. You are putting it out there all the time. You know, even the subtlest of feeling that doesn't even begin to make my hands quiver or something right now, you know, make me emote, will be broadcast, right? Right, see, and that's what you don't want to be, the drama.
Everybody's putting out.
All right, so you take this little frame that they give you and then play upon it. You know, get the feeling of what's going on here. All right.
Number four, the artist of odor. This comparison of supernal spirit activities to the physical recognition of chemical odors is indeed unfortunate, but Urantia mortals could hardly recognize this ministry by any other name. These artisans create their varied symphonies for the edification and delight of the advancing children of light. You have nothing on earth to which this type of spiritual grandeur can be even remotely compared.
But he still, he has a group number 4 and a label on it, unlike the next section. Right? So, you know, see again, you can see it's like, try to somehow let go of any specificity of what you attach to odor or smell. But just, there's a difference of consciousness to the form in your mind energy system when it's a smell compared to when it's a sight or a sound. And that subtleness of difference, you know, if you follow that up, it takes you up to these distinctions. That these are very, that the difference between the feeling of a sound and the feeling of a smell can be followed up to the difference between group number 2 and group number 4.
Yeah. So, in some,
some very transcendent way. Right? And see, it's somehow, you know, to take it beyond any physical recognition of chemical odor thing. It's like, well, I thought that's what smell was the physical recognition of chemical. It's like, well, can you go beyond the fact of the odor and somehow feel the truth of an odor in your mind? See, that's what they're trying to get at.
When you go to an ocean and you're sitting on the beach and you have kind of the experience with it,
mm-hmm.
and you smell that, and then you go away and you remember back to that, or if you're in a beautiful meadow and you you know, experience the way that smells, and then you're away from it and you remember back to that, it's more than just the chemical part that influences you. Yeah. So maybe it's kind of like that.
Yeah, that's a great thought to try to get from the fact to the truth that I was just suggesting, a great sort of like practical idea. You know, when you are separated from the literal chemical stimulus, you know, it's years later and you aren't in the mountain meadow, but you have this memory, you know, and what it invokes, and how we all know that a lot of times, you know, a memory of a smell is more efficient at bringing, you know, the fullness of the memory back than a sight or a sound or something. Right? So, I see. So all those sorts of subtle things, you know, things that see are like embellishing, that are very subtle, not the immediacy, you know, but that's what he's trying to get you to reflect on. Now, I mean, obviously, okay, we had sight and sound and odor, you know, or seeing and hearing and smelling. You know, it's the emotion designers. Okay, that doesn't seem to tie up with one of the 5 senses in any immediate way. That's more like, you know, just some sort of an internal thing. But you know, there's 7s, and there's only 5. We only have 5 senses, so obviously there's going to be 2 of them that don't seem to have any immediacy. Right? And the emotion designers is one of those. Okay, what about the next ones? I mean, before we even read it, I mean, just saying the presence embellishers, you know, if you say presence, okay, I mean, how do I know that I'm present with this couch and it isn't just sort of an optical illusion, you know, that it appears to be close? I mean, how do I, you know, verify to myself that it is actually close, I am present with it. I use my sense of touch. Right? See, so, you know, and you can see taste is coming up in number 6. See, so, you know, there's the 5. Seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting. And then you have 2 others. Let's see, was there anything else? I guess not. You notice he repeated the edification thing like he did in number 3. So, remember that an awful lot of this work of the artisans is helping you, you know, in your educational growth process, You know, you can obviously see that with what we're saying about the emotion designers. You have this mutual edification, you know, the socialization element. See, so all of that is in play, you know, besides just the art, the immediacy of the artistry. Remember, and there's a why to the artistry, too, that involves our ascension careers and zillions of things that we can't even imagine.
Can I remind people of something that does relate to this spiritual fragrance and odor that might actually give us a clue as to where they're going with this?
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, under the brilliant evening stars, they do talk about the fact that both types of brilliant evening stars are easily visible to Marantia personalities in certain types of supermaterial beings. The created beings of this interesting and versatile order, of which there are 4,832, possess a spirit force which can be manifested independently of their personal presence.
Yeah.
Then they tell us a little bit more about that in going to the circles of the universe aides on page 525 under the local system headquarters. And there they say the circles of the universe aides have the headquarters of the evening stars situated in the enormous central space. Here is located the system headquarters of Galantia, the associate head of this powerful group of super angels. And then down from there, the created evening stars exert their influence all over Gerasim, being possessed of such extra personality attributes. They speak of that again that they alluded to. Then they say, the entire world has been rendered spiritually fragrant since so many of their activities were transferred here from Salvington.
Yeah,
so
good
that
point.
That is definitely hearkening back to these.
Using the odor, smell reference or analogy or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, again, and it's a great example of what I was saying earlier about the remembering what an incredibly dynamic, rich, filled environment you're immersed in, you know, on high. Yeah, it's not like it appears to us here, where it seems like we're just this blob of protoplasm, and then there's this gap between us and something else. And you can imagine that if you have a very high vision, it all starts to kind of blur together into a system where the individuality of individuals is not immediately apparent. And you've got to focus in. If you really look at the environment there with a definitive unity eye, it would be a ubiquity of glory. And then you're going to have to try to focus down and actually find individuals in the midst of that. Because like we were just saying, you know, if it plays together and it's such a immense, complex harmony, it starts to be like a continuum, you know, rather than a collection of parts. So, great thing to bring out. So, yeah, just, you know, in any other place that they might use a reference like fragrant or smell or something like that to strive for some kind of a transcendent relationship to that statement rather than, you know, chemical, you know, stimulus of your olfactory mechanism, right? Yeah, good point. All right, so the presence embellishers, what do we have there?
Number five, the presence embellishers. These artisans are not occupied with the arts of self-adornment or the technique of creature beautification. They are devoted to the production of multitudinous and joyous reactions in individual Marantia and spirit creatures by dramatizing the significance of relationship through the positional values assigned to different Marantia and spirit orders in the composite ensembles of these diversified beings. These artists arrange supermaterial beings as you would living musical notes, odors, sights, and then blend them into the anthems of glory.
Okay, see, so he said, well, wait a minute, we've done the positional thing before. See, again, you see how all he can think of doing a lot of times is just kind of referring back to a foundational element. But, you know, here we're, you know, in each one of these, it's not going to be that immediacy like it was with the musicians where you're creating a specific melody line, like related to positions of beings. This is this subtle, higher harmonic embellishment aspect of what's going on, of the phenomenon, as opposed to sort of the foundational elements, you know, that you would call a melody, a sequence like that. This is obviously getting very nonlinear, very not sequential, you know, and you're not going to use a word like melody immediately for it. Okay, so, but, so we don't really know exactly how this differs from when they told us about the positional things before. But it is in this context of, it's in a different context at least, where you have things like the emotion designers as one of the sevenfold elements to make the full harmony. And that's certainly different than, you know, having that in the mix is different than when we had the positional thing in the mix before. Okay, so, and you notice how they even, you know, used the expression of anthems of glory, that idea of sort of stimulating and then having the beings play back. You know, like you're doing the back and forth, of an anthem, you know, like with a psalm, da 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 da. You know, you bounce it back and forth. You know, that word anthem is about that, how it's coming back. You know, where you get a group playing back and forth like that, resonating back and forth. And so he purposely using that anthem word like that. That too speaks to this more embellishment thing, rather than kind of just using them definitively, you know, to manifest something. You're doing some sort of more subtle, you know, interplay on top of that. Yeah, you got to just sort of grasp at every little straw he hands you, you know, looking for something.
Since we're talking about artisans, we're talking about mediums, you know, different mediums, like in paint mediums, or, you know, different, like music, you know, you're talking about like different instruments or vocal or whatever.
Yeah, each of these seven is a different medium,
right. They're each different mediums, and when you put different mediums together, you get different effects, and the way that you position them together makes huge difference. And you know, the thinness or thickness or the, you know, whatever variety, getting to know, you know, the mediums is critical, and positioning, and you know, how close and far, and you know, knowing your medium. And knowing what you can do with it, and what you ought to do with it, and what the potential is, and the super additive that happens when you do whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that this is talking mostly about, you know, the relationship of the thing, and the positioning kind of thing. And
So you can just, that's what they want you to do. Just try to take what experiences you have and reflect on a little bit, and kind of appreciate the subtlest aspects of whatever it is that you're thinking about. You know, and that would be kind of this division six here, the designers and embellishers would be those most subtle, transcendent, you know, elements.
These are so inspiring to me, you know, going through these different things, because, mm-hmm. you know, as far as remembering, you know, in our lowly, grotesque things that we do now,
yeah.
it's inspiring to kind of shake us up a little bit, and for me anyway, and start thinking, rethinking, renewing, you know, well, what are the things that I'm using, and what are potential mediums that I haven't even thought of that I can, you know, apply to what I'm doing now, and, and try to keep it bigger and think of the new perspectives I can come at this stuff with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, good point. I mean, you know, when you say artisan, you think, you know, you think, okay, well, we've got musical instruments, we've got paint, you know. I mean, to go beyond that, to think of everything as a potentially an instrument. Everything. You know, how could you play a group of beings that you manage on your job, you know, in a symphony? You know, just anything that you can think of. You know, you can see that there's nothing left untouched here. But when all is said and done with all these different artisans, every single thing can be played artistically. Yeah. Was there some? Oh, yeah, I had something.
Yeah. So, you know, here they've gone over basically the five senses, and you know, when we get to the mansion world, it's going to be a real, real rude awakening because we're going to have 70. You know, can't even fathom that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you'd be able to look at somebody because they're going to exude who they are or whatever. But then later on, as we get more advanced, it goes back down to seven senses, correct? Like, I think it's in spirit.
Right. You've got a lot of this difference of you know, how holistically you relate to things. And so, you know, it may be quote unquote fewer senses, but each one of those senses is so much more kaleidoscopic, you know. I mean, right now, our senses are very narrow, you know. Right. See, so that's what you get at. Yeah. Just remember, the higher you go, the more holistic it is. And so to say one on high is to say a lot more than to say one down here.
But the 7 years in the Marantia career, seven is in the spirit career,
yeah.
Right? So
Just again, remember how holistic it is when you get on high. All right, let's look at the next one here.
Six, the taste designers. And how can you be told of these artists? Faintly, I might suggest that they are improvers of Marantia taste, and they also endeavor to increase the appreciation of beauty through the sharpening of the evolving spirit senses.
And you see how they're, you know, keep pointing to beauty here, you know, to this the aesthetics, and you know that issue with aesthetics, you know, even as crude as our understanding of that science is right now, you know, and it's practically lost now. But as the Greeks tried to start it up in the 6th century BC, we quickly recognized it. That it involved very, very subtle issues about what makes something beautiful or not, pleasing or not to the eye, that it can be something very, very subtle. You see, so again, how that plays into the inherent subtleness that must be involved in this division six of designers and embellishers. But he used that exclamation point again. How can you be told of these artists? You are so coarse in your senses. All right. And then look how this one sums up, where you have this very definitive synthesizing of what went before. It's kind of an interesting twist in this division here.
Number seven, the Marantia synthesizers. These are the master craftsmen who, when all others have made their respective contributions, then add the culminating and finishing touches to the Marantia ensemble, thus achieving an inspiring portrayal of the divinely beautiful, an enduring inspiration to spirit beings and their Marantia associates. But you must await your deliverance from the animal body before you can begin to conceive of the artistic glories and the aesthetic beauties of the Marantia and spirit worlds.
All right. So, you know, there he even uses aesthetic. To literally think of that, you know, as being an art in itself, say, to bring emotion, you know, the product of emotion designers and what have you all together into a full harmony. And obviously why he waited to, you know, kind of really state the obvious at the end, that one. I mean, you know, it's completely too remote to relate to directly when you're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, how much more remote is 7 then, right? So, but there it is anyway, you know, so it wasn't hopeless. We found some inspiration, some things to kind of feel a little bit about what was going on there. It reminded us of, to always be looking for that which goes beyond the immediate. Definitely, if you want to develop your ability to start to see the world around you in a truer fashion, you need to be able to begin to see beyond the immediate actuality that's in front of you. The potentiality that's in front of you is vastly greater than the actuality that's in front of you. And in the eyes of the Father, there's no difference between potentiality and actuality. If you want to see the world in a more Father-like fashion, you need to develop this ability to see what's less easily noticeable. You know, begin to use your spiritual consciousness to see the subtleties, not just the gross elements, because by and large, all you're going to notice is that which is imperfect, you know, in that mode of gross discernment, coarse discernment. And your spiritual consciousness is going to be nothing but an error and evil detector. It's going to be a complete waste in your mind to have a spiritual consciousness if all you do is use it to point out the limitations of stuff. Okay? And to use it in a positive mode is not easy. You have to master the ability to start seeing subtleties, to notice the subtleties of the whole that are there despite the very limited nature of the parts that are, you know, immediately impress upon your consciousness. So work on it. Work on, you know, on reflecting on those that dedicate their careers to this sort of working on getting you focused in to the details, the subtleties.
Why is it, in your opinion, do we always go for the appraisal and the criticism of the finding the negative and finding fault and finding the negative rather than to try to go for what you're referring to as?
For those of you who haven't read, why is it that we always do that? Why do we always, focus on, you know, go right to the negative, go right to what's not there, how it's lacking, how it's limited. Again, remember, you're this material creature. You are, there's nothing immediate about associativity and unity. The thing that immediately is obvious to you is individuality. So that's your initial worldview, let's just say it that way, is that there is individuality about, and you examine it, you relate to it. Okay, let's say you actually have something that's genuinely or properly called spiritual consciousness, unity consciousness. But all you can, you know, all that you're immediately aware of in the external world is individuality. Okay, so think about how those two play together. Something that is related to unity, you know, that's fundamentally a unity experience, sensation, you know, whatever you want to say, consciousness, sense, related to individuality. Well, all it's going to, you know, the juxtaposing the two is That individuality is not unity. That individuality is not unity. That individuality is not unity. That's all it'll do, is judge every individuality to not be a unity. Duh. Okay? Of course individuality is not unity. But if you used your spiritual consciousness to actually see the unity, well, I don't see the unity. Yes. Can you go beyond sight? If all you rely on is your sight, you're never going to have a positive relationship to unity, because all you can see is individuality. Right? So that's why their unity consciousness is just an error and evil detector. You've got to begin to use your insight to see that which is not, to be aware of that which is not seeable, that which cannot be seen. An insight is not another sight. Your spiritual insight, your third cosmic intuition, doesn't allow you to see spirit substance. It's not a sight. It's an insight. It allows you to recognize the presence of unity even though you can't see it. And it's sad to record that so few persons on your ranch have taken delight in cultivating the ability to know the existence of that which cannot be seen. That's what we're getting at. It's just trivially inescapable that you'll use your spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector, because no individuality is unity. And then even worse, first you just point at all these things and say, that's not unity, that's not unity, that's not unity. And then over time, not only is it not unity, but it's evil. Yeah. And so eventually individuality becomes evil to you. And then it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. There's nothing evil about individuality. Evil's a word that's related to unity, not to individuality. If you look at the threefold actuality chart, right? I mean, evil is here in the, when you have individuality, associativity, unity down the blocks, right? There is no evil or goodness to individuality. Those are spirit words. Yeah.
How does the ego relate to that? You said it was spirit consciousness that was causing this.
It's spirit consciousness that, if you don't have spiritual consciousness, you would never point at an individuality and declare it to not be unity. The word unity wouldn't be in the dictionary. You would have no, an animal never looks at an individuality and says, oh boy, that could be so much more perfect. I can imagine how that could be idyllic. They have no unity consciousness, so they never find an individuality lacking in unity. It's just an individuality, it's just a fact, and it's fine.
So it's not the ego, that's the evil and error detector.
Yeah, see, again, a basic egoism, a basic self is not evil. See, that's what I was trying to get you to roll around to. Since the dawn of time, people with some spiritual consciousness has slowly come to the conclusion that individuality is evil. I am by nature sinful and unclean. Ego is to be, rejected. You have to somehow de-egoize yourself and whatnot. That's all false. What's the very first thing that you do when you go to heaven, quote unquote, when you leave this world? You go through the mansion worlds and the local system headquarters, where you definitively individuate yourself. Step one in heaven is that evil thing of individuality. Maybe it's not evil, right? It's the foundation of everything. Right? How are you going to be a person if you're not individuated? A personality is absolutely unique. If you de-individuate yourself because you get all mystical and fuzzy, then by definition, there's no place for your personality to manifest. The only way your personality can manifest is if you're definitively individuated. That's why it's step one on high. They need persons on high, not fancy animals. So step one is to individuate you definitively, so personality can finally manifest.
And it's not a natural, innate thing to be negative. We have to be taught it. It's very cultural. It's very, we're innately positive. We're born positive.
Right,
it doesn't seem it, though, because of the culture.
Sure. A 6-year-old doesn't use their spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector. But if you don't, you know, if you aren't taught to go upward with those at initial encirclement that you're given by grace, material gravity will drag it downward. Right? You know, and the fact that the environment, you know, and its limitations, I mean, they're, you know, they're just manifestations of the material gravity that's, you know, that drags everything down. I mean, you have to choose to direct that upward. It won't naturally go upward. You have to choose it. You know, you don't just float to the Isle of Paradise. You have to choose to ascend to paradise.
I just want to leave a door open about that. Why do we just naturally become,
It's again because there's in this life perforce you serve two masters. You know, I mean, the reality is even without benighted people around you, if you don't choose to be an upist, you will be a downist.
Yeah,
material gravity will just pull you down.
And I don't usually speak up and go on, but I make comments. But this is to me something that it's like we're not just God didn't devise a plan where we're brought into a world of negative. Then we're naturally negative, and it just is an appearance thing because of culture and.
Right. I mean, we all. You know. I mean, you don't have to have this much of a negative environment, but you know, the inevitabilities are just as true.
Yeah.
You know, on the most perfectly administered world as they are on ours.
But we have to be taught negativity.
Yeah. So. Just, you know, just remember that, you know, and don't let yourself be taught negativity, right? I mean, again, so you have to choose to not be taught.
Now they tell me.
Right? I mean, it's just, you have to choose.
Well, you have help.
Choose.
Right. Right, but again, the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, the Thought Adjuster, the angels, they can't help you if you don't first choose.
Yeah,
they're wholly subservient to your will.
But even when you choose, it's not on your own.
But it just, you know, just remember that. That choosing is the initiating. It initiates the process of being helped. They're not going to help you until you supply the favorable conditions. You have to allow for it. You have free will to not be helped. All right, so let's get to so finally the division number 7 here, and so we're at some
you're
very
just hold on
one second. Okay.
You're just bringing out the evil part, that you have the free will not to be helped. In other words, so
and
that's true, but I mean, you know, but why dwell on that? Versus
of course, don't dwell on it. Okay. Yeah, but I just you know the only reason that I would stress that you have the free will not to be helped is because there's a lot of people on this planet that believe that spirit is innately divine. And so you don't have to choose to have a positive relationship to it. You automatically have a positive relationship to spirit. And that couldn't be more false. The more you believe that, the more danger you're in. Right? That's what the Revelator is trying to get us to. There is nothing innately divine about spirit substance.
But the part of God within you is
and yet, you have the free will to tell that fragment of God to destroy your soul. See, again,
you do have the free will, but you know
that's all we're getting in. So,
cognitive choice. I don't think most people would choose that. Now,
why did Lucifer choose it?
Well, because he went cosmically insane.
No,
that doesn't mean everybody else is
going to
choose it.
I'm just trying to bring that in.
He's only one out of
The point.
Three or four of the whole, or how many ever went straight? But I mean, all go.
The point to get to where you're going is what Barbara was trying to bring up. Choose to stay where God started you. That initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit, those initial forms in the upper domain of your mind are perfectly formed. If you follow those, that spirit is innately divine. See, the reason we think that spirit is innately divine is because the initial relationship to spirit that we're given by grace is divine. Grace can trick you. It tricked Lucifer into thinking that things were innately divine. If there wasn't grace, Lucifer wouldn't have gone down the path. The reason that Lucifer went down the path he did is because there's grace. It appeared to him, you know, first principle Lucifer manifesto is, this stuff doesn't have to be created and controlled. It's naturally well-formed like this. That's his first principle. See? That it's innately like that. That it's not, the universe isn't mind-made and personality-managed. See, it's, he thought that, he was confused. He thought that the grace was innate. No, the grace is added.
Well, God loves you whether you love God or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, God loves you whether you love God or not. So there's nothing to fear here. You know, when I talk about these things, if you're being fearful, stop yourself. Don't let yourself be fearful of the facts.
Well, you have to consider your audience. Mm-hmm. You know, human beings are innately fearful, and it doesn't matter how long they've been listening to you. Mm-hmm. You're going to evoke their fears by presenting some of these things.
Animal origin beings are innately fearful.
Yes.
But humans aren't. Well, animal origin beings are innately fearful.
You can't intellectually bootstrap yourself into being a human being. You have fears that unless you're working on them, you're not going to get over them.
No, see, you can choose. If you couldn't choose, then Jesus would be playing a trick on you by saying, fear not. You can fear not. You are in control. You can master yourself. You don't have to be fearful. Choose to not be. Choose this day whom you will serve. Are you going to serve your fear? Or are you going to serve God? You have absolute free will. Fear is down at the mechanical level of mind. The first adjutant can rule mechanical mind. It doesn't take much adjutant mind to rule the mechanical level of fear.
Just
recognize that. How far are you up the levels of meaning if you're still dominated by fear? It means you aren't even using your first adjutant yet to dominate the mechanical mind. I mean, this is how lowly a fact that is. You know? And why the revelators say, if that's what's happening, if you feel fear in your mind, that you short-circuit everything. It's so fundamental. You know, so let go of what you've been taught. Don't allow yourself to be taught like this anymore. It's not true. You cannot fear. You can do it. Jesus told you you could do it. He didn't say, over the next trillion years, slowly fear less. He said, fear not today and never fear again. Stop it right now. You have control over it. You have complete control over it. A human has control over their fear. A human has an upper domain of the hourglass that has six, you know, that reaches up to a level six above the level of fear. You can do it. Just know you can. If you still doubt that you can, if you still question about whether you can, then you will be a victim of fear. Doubt not anymore. You know, you can read those passages in the part four. You don't have to listen to me say it. Listen to when it says it in part four. Listen to Jesus tell you this. You have to eliminate this doubt.
Say that, but oftentimes the actual doing of it for a lot of people is, you know, isn't just done like that. You really have to put some time, effort, and
effort. Yeah, right. Chris?
You know, and then you fall fear and you say no, and like, I mean, it's not just like I'm going to will it, so therefore I'm never going to fear again. It seems to me, anyway, from experientially,
ongoing.
Right.
Chris?
Yep.
Stay conscious about it. Excuse me.
So when you're fearful and you're just not able to become objective at that time and fear not, that there's a safety element in that because you're down at that level. So you're not fiddling with the stuff up here. that you oughtn't fiddle with if you're not focused properly. You're down here in the fear level, and thank heavens for that safety element.
Right, ready.
It's not going to cause you more harm. It'd be good if you could fear not and move up, but don't let it make you more fearful because you're feeling bad that you're so fearful.
Right, again, okay. All right, so, I was leaving out all those details. I mean, what I just said didn't change any of the facts that, why do I have fear? Because God made me that way. The devil didn't make me that way. God made me with my foundational level of fear. That is exactly the way I'm supposed to be to begin with. I mean, if I was not fearful to begin with, there wouldn't be a human race. It would have died off a million years ago if we didn't begin with our feet planted on the zeroth level of meaning, planted on fear. That is a divine beginning, but it is not a divine ending. Right? So when I point to moving beyond that, I'm not negating the value, or maybe I should say worth, right, of that as a starting point. It's just like prayer. Prayer gets you started. That's why you're genetically programmed to pray, just like you're genetically programmed to be fearful. Both of those start at a very foundational level. But you're supposed to use prayer as a means to get up to thanksgiving, and then through thanksgiving to get to worship. As the revelers point out, believing that prayer is an end in itself is very, very unfortunate. Because that means you'll never even get to thanksgiving, let alone worship, if you see prayer as an end in itself. Prayer is a means to an end. Fear is a means to an end. These things are means to an end. Okay? Set your sights above them. Know that you can grow up from them. You can follow what Jesus told you to do. Fear not.
Yeah, fear is down at the base of the Lord domain. So in as much as we live in the Lord domain, that fear will appear real. But if we can get ourselves up into the upper domain,
yeah,
or in relationship to the upper domain, there's no room for fear up there.
Fear ceases to be fearful when you see it objectively, right? The only reason fear is fearful is because you experience it subjectively. As soon as you see fear objectively, it ceases to be fearful. Why did Jesus have peace that passes all understanding? Because everyone goes, well, it's impossible not be fearful in that situation. And yet he was. Right? It's because he was no longer subject to fear. It's not like he didn't have that energy in the lower domain of his hourglass anymore. He didn't somehow magically change mechanical mind and adjutant mind. It's still all there. It's just now he sees that objectively instead of subjectively. So he's the master of it. For him, it wasn't fear. What was it? When you master the zeroth level of meaning, it becomes focus. Right? What does fear look like when it's no longer fear? It's a thing called focus. And if you can't focus, well, you're going to be hopeless. So do you want to somehow cut the fear out of your mind? No, you want to master it instead of being a victim of it. Right? That's what it means to fear not. Not to magically make fear disappear, somehow not be an animal origin being anymore. No, self-mastery. Jesus had achieved self-mastery. Yeah. This is why we have the Forging Egg and Dr. Steele summer presentation, is to go through this in detail and get to this recognition. Exactly what does a personal living philosophy look like in the hourglass analogy? What exactly does a mastered self look like in the hourglass analogy? The details, the specificity of it, so you know what you're trying to do. You're not trying to somehow get away from your ego, like all these people have tried, these religions have tried to do, somehow try to not make themselves have an adjutant mind. Right? What a ridiculous fool's errand. No, you need to master that adjutant mind. Right? every bit of it, all the way down to the foundation of it, the mechanical level. So, meanwhile, back at the heights of a personal living philosophy, rather than at the bottom of the hourglass, can be found something where the harmony workers dwell. Right? Something that we obviously have a long way, a long journey upward to even be even slightly related to. Let's see what they say, what the archangel says here.
Number 7, the harmony workers. These artists are not concerned with music, painting, or anything similar, as you might be led to surmise. They are occupied with the manipulation and organization of specialized forces and energies which are present in the spirit world, but which are not recognized by mortals. If I had the least possible basis for comparison, I would attempt to portray this unique field of spirit achievement, but I despair. There is no hope of conveying to mortal minds this sphere of celestial artistry. Nevertheless, that which cannot be described may still be implied.
Right, so that which cannot be described can still, may, you know, I didn't say can, may still be implied. Again, if you've taken delight in cultivating and have some ability to have insight, to go beyond some the immediacy of descriptions, of facts. Right? So there's an implication potential if you can follow truth. If you can feel truth in the upper domain of the hourglass. There's no truth that can possibly be felt with mere adjutant mind in the lower domain of the hourglass. All of truth, relationship to truth, is in the upper domain. You know, and the only mind that's in the upper domain is the mind when you take the essence of all 7 adjutants in the mechanical level and you coordinate it together into a spiritualized, unified energy system where it no longer has that facet, the facets or the phases of the adjutants. That's the mind, kind of mind that can feel truth. Right? See, so think about how tenuous this is going to be for a 7th circler or a 6th circler to have much, you know, resonance with truth and what he's pointing to here. You know, when you still haven't really noticed one of the adjutants yet, you know, in your mind. Courage is not something that's really coursed through your veins yet or whatever. You know, or you have an imbalance in them. You've got too much, you know, use of the 3rd adjutant, the energy of loyalty, or whatever it might be. All those things, those cross currents, you know, with the adjutants that are poor blending or lack of blending produce. but by grace, a well-formed coordination of that mind energy is up there already. There's that initial thread there. You can, if you choose, strike step with that little thread of a beginning. And it's possible. I mean, if you didn't have that grace again, he would have stopped right with, but I despair, period. He would have just ended it there. Something that it's so beyond us that he can't even dream up some goofy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, like he did in the previous one.
It's a big statement to just say, I can't convey this. Don't expect by reading this that something's been conveyed.
Right.
He's conveying that he can't.
There's
convey.
Nothing to be seen here. There's nothing to right. be seen here. Right. So if you don't have insight, forget about it.
Right.
There's nothing to be seen here. Well, all I can do is see the words and read them. No, you can do something more than that. Right? Yeah.
Beauty, rhythm, and harmony are intellectually associated and spiritually akin. Truth, fact, and relationship are intellectually inseparable and associated with the philosophic concepts of beauty. Goodness, righteousness, and justice are philosophically interrelated and spiritually bound up together with living truth and divine beauty.
So I wonder if it takes a personal living philosophy in the upper domain of the hourglass to relate to what he's talking about here. What word did he use? Did he say religiously or no, scientifically? No, philosophically. It's only in the wholeness of truth. And look at what he's doing. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, talk endlessly about this. You work on combining the wholeness that you might begin to feel with that paragraph with all the specificity. Look at what fun he had there. He didn't just say beauty, truth, goodness, did he? He added two other words to each one of those. Beauty, rhythm, harmony together, truth, fact, relationship, and goodness, righteousness, justice. Yeah, and just one little point of note in what he did there. You know how we talk about, you have the truths of existential eternity that are in that triplet of beauty, truth, goodness? Yeah, but then there's the truths of experiential eternity that are in the triplet of fact, truth, goodness. Look at what he did here. He's got the beauty, truth, goodness, and the fact, the truth directly tied to fact. See how he's pointing out emerging, a harmonizing of the existential and the experiential. If you can somehow think about all those things at once, you're beginning to bring your relationship to God the Father and God the Mother together. It's all kinds of things that he's trying to do there, trying to imply, right? In the wholeness and the subtlety, if you somehow can encompass everything there, not leaving out a single word, you know, a single facet. Okay.
Cosmic concepts of true philosophy, the portrayal of celestial artistry, or the mortal attempt to depict the human recognition of divine beauty can never be truly satisfying if such attempted creature progression is ununified. These expressions of the divine urge within the evolving creature may be intellectually true, emotionally beautiful, and spiritually good, but the real soul of expression is within the evolving creature.
No, the expression
is absent unless, thank you, these realities of truth, meanings of beauty, and values of goodness are unified in the life experience of the artisan, the scientist, or the philosopher.
The human that has a personal living philosophy, right? Right? A true artisan, a true scientist, a true philosopher. See, and just all these things that are trying to get you to not be satisfied with some initial successes. You know, these expressions of the divine urge within the evolving creature may be intellectually true, emotionally beautiful, and spiritually good, but, I mean, what human has wanted to put a but after that sequence? What human, you know, so-called human, what fancy animal is not completely content if he gets to the end of those three?
Yeah.
Who craves more than that? I mean, just the emotionally beautiful is a complete lifestyle solution for most people with a spiritual consciousness. They don't even need anything else.
Yeah.
They just bliss out, you know, in that which is emotionally beautiful, and that's the end of the story for them. They're completely content. There's no hunger and thirst in them anymore. Right? Now, but the real soul of expression is absent unless these realities of truth, meanings of beauty, and values of goodness are unified. Right? You have the individuality, the associativity, and unity. Have you turned them into a triunity yet? Well, step one to have a triunity is to actually have three things to triunitize. And if you just have one, like I was saying, like emotionally beautiful, right? So step one is to get a threefold actuality. and then to encompass it with your personality and make it a reality. Right? But the real soul, see, and if you do that, if you actually encompass that threefold actuality and realityize it with your personality, you, that triunity form is something that can be copied into the soul by the adjuster. Only those triunity forms are copyable. Mere unity is not copyable, has no survival value. It tells you in paper 102. If it's just the unity phase, it's not copyable, has no survival value. It has to be a triunity. Okay? And he's trying to help you with the richness of the various things that he's tossing out here to get you to reach for something that's complex enough to be able to be encompassed into one of these holes. Okay? All right, so you know, you see what he's getting at. I mean, we're not talking, we don't seem to be talking about celestial artisans at all, but we are talking about you striving for some very, very remote transcendent potential that you're given, that it's sad to record that so few persons strive toward. If you can somehow get all the way to the ends of that immediate potential that you have, you're getting towards these ends of the celestial artisans that could be group, you know, division number 7, the harmony workers. See, that's what he's trying to draw this parallel. Right? That which you could strive for internally on high is part of an outer life. This most transcendent of inner goals that you can hardly even imagine right now is literally part of the outer life up there. So does that bring it back around to the beginning, where do we think of spirit as being in the external world right now? Not even close. But that's what they told us up front. Yeah. Getting to that point where you recognize that spirit is a substance in the external world. It's not a feeling in your mind. It's a substance in the external world. See, to get to this where, you know, all this talk about your inner life and these transcendent goals of your inner striving, imagine the heights of that, what you could imagine inside in relationship to a thought adjuster and all of that glory that might be possible with a fragment of God within your mind for an inner potential. Imagine all that could be outside too. What if your sleeping quarters was like that? See what they're getting at? All right. Right. That's the first thing you're thinking. It's like, I'm never going to sleep up there. I mean, how will you ever be able to, you know, to want to go to sleep? You know, you'll be like that little kid that does not want to go to sleep again, see? You must enter the kingdom as a little child.
These divine qualities are perfectly and absolutely unified in God. And every God-knowing man or angel possesses the potential of unlimited self-expression on ever-progressive levels of unified self-realization by the technique of the never-ending achievement of God-likeness, the experiential blending in the evolutionary experience of eternal truth, universal beauty, and divine goodness.
See, the experiential blending. See, bringing the experiential and the existential together. Don't just stop at your first sense of relationship to the existential, eternal truth, universal beauty, and divine goodness. Don't just start with being initiated by God the Father. Go somewhere. One must do something as well as be something. Don't just be something that was initiated in relationship with eternal truth, universal beauty, and divine goodness by God the Father. Be someone who's journeying down the way in greater and greater relationship to God the Mother. Experiential blending. God the Father can't help you one iota with experiential blending. He has no experiential deity in him, pure existential deity. Zero help in experiential blending. Great help with giving you an initial existential relationship with eternal truth, universal beauty, and divine goodness. He does that quite perfectly. But that's it. Everything else is up to your choosing to come into greater and greater growing relationship with the whole and the individuality of the whole.
Yeah. So that sounds like to me, that means that as I'm learning, I need to be integrating these things into my hands-on, everyday kind of stuff.
Yeah. Try to figure out how to everyday. Make them all the more experiential and dynamic and in play and a doing, you know, rather than a being.
So
anything you can
think
of.
Think about all this fancy stuff and yeah. not use it. I mean, I need to actually integrate it with all the more tangible stuff.
Yeah, and you'll know that you're beginning to make progress with the psychic circles if you actually start to have success in integrating that. You know, that's what I tell you. I mean, yeah, that success, that material success.
So I can't just leave it in this room. I have to take it out and take it home.
Yeah. You can't just leave it in this room. You can't just leave it on the mountaintop where they wanted to build a tabernacle and stay there forever. You know, you can't leave it in your meditation. You can't, you know, you've got to take it out and put, one must do something as well as be something. Right? You must strive for a relationship with the whole and the individuality of the whole.
That sounds like work, Chris.
It does. It sounds like a lot of work. But you don't have to worry about how much work it is, because how long do you have to do all that work? Forever. It's okay.
Spread it out a little.
You could, yeah, don't try to, you know, how many times they tell you, don't try to cram all this stuff they're going to teach you into one short mortal life. What you want to try to cram into this short little mortal life is a genuine beginning. You know, genuinely begin. Don't believe that you've reached the end. Right? All right, let's do this final one. There's a lot of inspirational material in wrapping up this last section here.
Number 8, mortal aspirations and Maranja achievements. Although celestial artisans do not personally work on material planets such as Urantia, they do come from time to time from the headquarters of the system to proffer help to the naturally gifted individuals of the mortal races. When thus assigned, these artisans temporarily work under the supervision of the planetary angels of progress. The seraphic hosts cooperate with these artisans in attempting to assist these mortal artists who possess inherent endowments and who also possess adjusters of special and previous experience.
Okay, so here's where, if you're reflecting on this paper, it should finally sink in. Oh, this is why up to this point he's been pounding me with a sledgehammer over and over again, reminding me how short the distance is that I exist above pond scum. Okay? Constantly reminding me of how limited I am. Because He's trying to build up to this paragraph and the next one. He knows he's been given the task of telling you something that could be so problematically delusional. He's about to validate a cherished belief, at least, you know, in part. Muses aren't just imaginings. There are actual muses. It's lowercase m, not the you know, Greek mythology capital M muses, but lowercase m muses. There are actually muses. Okay, so if you're an artist, and you probably will stumble upon the Celestial Artisan paper, and you'll be very intrigued by this paper. You'll get sucked into it. But if you aren't humbled appropriately, you could fly off on a very unfortunate tangent. You know, I knew it. I knew I was the one. I always knew it. I am the answer. You could see how problematic it would be. You know, and I am that because I mean, I literally have celestial artisans from Havona or whatever, you know, right there manipulating my mind and making my music more beautiful or whatever. Oh, my. See, this is going to be problematic. Okay, so, but he's told us that there actually are muses. And, but he throws out some qualifiers there. The seraphic hosts cooperate with these artisans in attempting to assist those mortal artists who possess inherent endowments, so it's got to be a genetic thing, and who also possess adjusters of special and previous experience. Well, adjusters couldn't be no more divine. Any old adjuster is going to work. No, most adjusters will not be adequate. You need a very special adjuster for this to be. If that adjuster's not there, if you've got all of the genetics but you don't have the adjuster, the muses are not going to come and minister to you. Well, how unfair is that? No, it's not a matter of not being fair. It's just a fact they can't help you unless, because you're, as they're about to read, you need both elements.
You need the equipment.
Right?
Yeah,
but you notice, even if you've got an experienced adjuster, it's special. And we have adjusters with previous experience, but it's got to be a special kind of experience. Okay? You know, as infinitely potentialized as an adjuster is and is perfectly divine and everything, you know, the run-of-the-mill adjuster is completely inadequate for this. They can't hold a tune.
So how much of the...
Yeah.
Say in some other places, if you'd gotten more of this, you
know. See, you think about, you know, and so, yeah, you got to get, you know, work with the Swiss cheese of our genetics because we didn't get the proper biologic uplift and blending, you know, and you got to, you know, look for a special adjuster. So this is not going to, you know, going to be a high frequency event. That you get this perfect storm that gets bestowed with a muse. All right, see what they say next here.
There are three possible sources of special human ability. At the bottom, always, there exists the natural or inherent aptitude. Special ability is never an arbitrary gift of the gods. There is always an ancestral foundation for every outstanding talent, in addition to this natural ability, or rather supplemental thereto, there may be contributed the leadings of the thought adjuster in those individuals whose indwelling adjusters may have had actual and bona fide experiences along such lines on other worlds and in other mortal creatures. In those cases where both the human mind and the indwelling adjuster are unusually skillful, the spirit artisans may be delegated to act as harmonizers of these talents, and otherwise to assist and inspire these mortals to seek forever perfecting ideals and to attempt their enhanced betrayal for the edification of the realm.
I see, so this should add an element to these artisans, that you need one of these artisans. Okay, one of these artisans might be an ascending mortal, who is going to come and help an adjuster because they don't know how to do it on their own. They need one of these artisans to teach the adjuster how to better synchronize with their human to produce the potentials that are inherent. There's an artistry to that harmonization that the adjuster doesn't innately have. It takes an artisan with lots of experience to teach an adjuster how to do this. Think about how radical this is. That you as an ascending mortal could be sent as a muse to teach an adjuster something. I mean, this is almost mind-boggling.
Almost.
Yeah. Right? The only reason I say almost mind-boggling is what does even that ascending mortal have that adjuster doesn't have? A personality, right? So Think, like we were saying, the first job is to get you definitively individuated so personality can actually manifest. When you leave the local system, more definitively manifesting personality, this won't seem so incomprehensible to you. Because harmony doesn't come by mere actuality. It comes through reality. And only pattern can realityize. And an adjuster doesn't have the pattern. It's just an actuality. It's not a reality in that sense. It doesn't have a personality. And so it doesn't know how to do that. So even that little universe of this gifted mortal's mind and the adjuster, that little universe of the two of them, needs to be personality managed by this muse. It doesn't happen naturally that the two come together. All the potentials are there, but nothing happens until the muse comes and encompasses it with personality and realityizes it.
That's why you find them on the subtle light and white planets, like in the very beginning,
so
they work.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there's just, you know, so you just think about all this.
Because we're more on subtle light and white planets, people's, I mean, the whole biological thing is much more perfect, it's much more easier.
Right, yeah. I mean, it says all those celestial organs do not personally work on material planets such as Urantia. Okay, so in terms of, you know, the celestial organs, we talked about how they're working at all the levels in the local universe. You know, and when a planet is, you know, settled in light and life, it becomes much more just part of that whole hierarchy, right? But they point out, even if you're just in a very beginning stage, occasionally, even though they don't sort of, like, reside there and work there daily, a muse can still come to a lowly world that's a long ways away from light and life. Because occasionally there's an individual and an adjuster that are foreshadowing a great time to come. Yeah? And
do they have to be in Seraphim to get here?
Yeah, yeah.
So it takes
them a while. A celestial artisan would, yeah, come here in Seraphim, yeah. And yeah, and that whole bit about, see, that they say at the end, and to attempt their enhanced betrayal for the edification of the realm, fostering that world towards light and life, where this will be a run-of-the-mill thing as opposed to an exception. But you know, but anyway, you can see, and there's just all kinds of stuff there, and the most problematic element, like I said, is just telling you that muses aren't, you know, just wishful thinking by artists. But be very humble about that fact. I mean, you may be the most genetically talented thing that ever was born on this planet, but you didn't get an adjuster that had any experience with an incredible artist on some other world. You know, and think about this. So in other words, highly likely, how did that adjuster get this incredible experience? By riding a profound artist down to iniquity. Right, you know, we're probably talking about a supreme adjuster.
Or a different fusion.
Right? So, right, it might be an advanced, right? But you start to talk about something really special, and you think, well, what if it was really, really fancy? It's probably a supreme adjuster then. Well, the only way they got that way, you know, is riding someone to iniquity. I was like, well, maybe they rode a non-artist to iniquity, but they were in another artist, you know, before, where they don't fuse with adjusters. I mean, you could, yeah, but just, you know, I just want you to.
Many people go to iniquity.
Just remember, that's the only way to make a supreme adjuster.
You can't get a supreme. Just think about it. So, like, if you apply at some other place, that, you know, most of the people on this planet could be supreme or adjusters. So there must be billions of people.
Lots of reservists have supreme adjusters. On every world, plus every single incarnation of every magisterial son and creator son requires a supreme adjuster.
Right.
I mean, just to do the 700,000 seventh bestowals of the 700,000 creator sons required 700,000 people to go to iniquity, at least. Right? It's the only way a creator son can have an adjuster on his seventh bestowal.
The cosmos doesn't live.
An advanced adjuster can't serve a creator son in his seventh bestowal. It takes a supreme adjuster.
All the ones he gave me, I should not lose one. Will that many go to iniquity?
Yeah. Lots and lots and lots. You got to break a lot of eggs to make God the supreme. That's another story. That's not. That's at least an hour conversation. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely serve. Not. Everything is used for the greater good. Okay, so just notice. See, there's a large paragraph break. See the take a deep breath, be humble, read these two paragraphs. Okay, now let me wrap up the paper. And see those two paragraphs about the muses. They stand on their own, and then he finishes up the paper.
There is no caste in the ranks of spirit artisans. No matter how lowly your origin, if you have ability and the gift of expression, you will gain adequate recognition and receive the due appreciation as you ascend upward in the scale of Marantia experience and spiritual attainment. There can be no handicap of human heredity or deprivation of mortal environment which the Marantia career will not fully compensate and wholly remove. And all such satisfactions of artistic achievement and expressionful self-realization will be affected by your own personal efforts in progressive advancement. At last, the aspirations of evolutionary mediocrity may be realized. While the gods do not arbitrarily bestow talents and ability upon the children of time, they do provide for the attainment of the satisfaction of all their noble longings and for the gratification of all human hunger for supernal self-expression.
You see, he's trying to end with great hope. You see here how much he's trying to bring in hope. Don't despair like he did in writing this paper. Be hopeful. But you know, notice some of the little elements. I didn't mention it before when he brought it up. He brings it up here again. While the gods do not arbitrarily bestow talents and ability upon the children of time. You know, I mean, that's huge. I mean, that just shatters such a long-held belief by so many religionists for so long that God touches people and gives, you know, no. It's all done with genetics. There's no bestowing of talent. In the fiat, God the Father-like way that humans have always imagined. There is a bestowing of talents. But it doesn't come from the top down like that, God the Father fashion, touching you. It bubbles up in the hole through the genetics. It comes from God the Mother. She's the way for your talents to get to you, not the Father. Okay, so now think about that. So all of those statements, but there's a qualifier right at the beginning. If you have ability and the gift of expression. Okay, so you're not going to magically transcend your genetic beginnings. Okay, they might be hidden under a bushel right now. So it appears that you didn't get anything. And that will, you know, you'll be freed from that. But they're going to stress this as they go on. I mean, there are still those who, you know, on the mansion worlds all the way up through the local universe that could never, ever in 100 trillion years be a celestial musician. They don't have the ability and the gift of expression. You notice it's not just have the ability, but also you got to be able to, you know, use the associating mechanism appropriately to bring it from the inner life to the outer life. Okay? So, but if that's not an issue, if you have the ability and the gift of expression, then, you know, nothing will prevent you from fully actualizing these potentials. So if you're a frustrated artist right now, that frustration will melt away as you ascend. And you will manifest, you know, what you can visualize beyond your wildest imagination. In the full seven folds of seven that we were just reading about. Right? Okay.
But every human being should remember many ambitions to excel, which tantalize mortals in the flesh, will not persist with these same mortals in their Marantia and spirit careers. The ascending Merangians learn to socialize their former purely selfish longings and egoistic ambitions. Nevertheless, those things which you so earnestly long to do on earth and which circumstances so persistently denied you, if, after acquiring true moda insight in the Merangia career, you still desire to do, then will you most certainly be granted every opportunity fully to satisfy your long-cherished desires.
Okay, so see how that works? So, again, the qualifier, there's going to be a whole bunch of things that you're not going to maintain that you might be very intrigued by right now. And one of those is simply, when you first wake up on the mansion worlds, you know, you aren't immediately, you know, able to have moda consciousness. You know, you've talked about this. You've got a ways to go to get enough harmony in your mind to actually have moda consciousness. So, like, when you wake up in the first mansion world, you've got all kinds of individuals around you who have purely selfish longings and egoistic ambitions. Okay, you're not going to wake up in this, you know, in the first mansion world where there's no egos. Okay, and, you know, that egoism that they're talking about, notice it's not egotism. Okay, so it's not the negative. But that basic immature individuality will still be there. I mean, how could there not be? The whole point of, like we said, of the local system is to definitively individuate you. I mean, so you start with an immature individual and you mature it. You can't start with no individual and somehow make an individual, right? So we all start as immature individuals. And then it's our job to master that and become a mature individual, not to de-individuate, because you think that the immature individual is evil and some should somehow be cut off, right? Right? So that you can become pure unity. Okay, so see, those sorts of things. We've talked about that a lot. I mean, you know, don't overplay the first and second mansion worlds. I mean, they are, you pick up where you left off. There's a lot of immaturity there still. You have to all be taught the tongue of Satania because no one can consciousize the local universe tongue yet. No one has moda consciousness yet. I mean, you know, the guy standing next to you, you know, is one of the first million humans on some world and is extreme, you know, died as an extremely primitive human, for instance, you know, right? I mean, so.
Thank God they got the
bins. Right. Okay, but anyway, let's not focus on all the negativity there. You know, yeah. Notice how much, you know, you notice that he's not calling you grotesque, but it's not like he hasn't stopped reminding you of, you know, and stopped putting qualifiers in. He's still trying to keep you grounded in the facts here. Okay, now just read it all the way through the end and we'll talk about it.
Before ascending mortals leave the local universe to embark upon their spirit careers, they will be satiated respecting every intellectual, artistic, and social longing or true ambition which ever characterized their mortal or Merangia planes of existence. This is the achievement of equality, of the satisfaction of self-expression and self-realization, but not the attainment of identical experiential status, nor the complete obliteration of characteristic individuality in skill, technique, and expression. But the new spirit differential of personal experiential attainment will not become thus leveled off and equalized until after you have finished the last circle of the Havona career. And then will the paradise residents be confronted with the necessity of adjusting to that absonite differential of personal experience, which can be leveled off only by the group attainment of the ultimate of creature status, the seventh stage spirit destiny of the mortal finaliters. And this is the story of the celestial artisans, that cosmopolitan body of exquisite workers who do so much to glorify the architectural spheres with the artistic portrayals of the divine beauty of the paradise creators. indicted by an archangel of Nebadon.
All right. So, just, you know, let's just, you know, just notice briefly the, you know, the details that he's thrown in there to help you to understand your universe career, your ascension career a little bit, and then the career after your ascension career as a finaliter. So notice how carefully he lays this out. By the time you get to leaving the local universe as a first stage spirit, you will have been given the opportunity to fully express and realize all of these sort of tensions and longings and yearnings within you. But it doesn't mean that as first stage spirits, every one of us is an equal musician. There will still be some of us that are not good musicians at all.
Don't
doubt. Okay? Right, there's still going to be vast differential as a first stage spirit, second stage spirit, etc. You know, what do they point out? You don't all become equally proficient at finite tasks until you've finished the inner circle of Avona. It's not until then that we've all leveled off all those differences. Yeah. So that bit about, you know, getting to the Isle of Paradise and being finitely perfect. See, that's a way of thinking a little more specificity about what that means. I mean, and everyone is perfected finitely. They're in that state where you've leveled off all these initial differentials of just your nature. Because you're all perfect. But of course, you still have an experiential differential, you know. But just, you know, in the context that you immediately think of, you know, I could never be a good musician. You know, that will finally be totally not the case by the time you get to the Isle of Paradise. Okay, it may not mean that you're going to be a musician because there may be other things that you're more immediately, you know, appropriately doing. But you could. Yeah. You know, so when they talk about, but the new spirit differential, see that, you know, thinking of getting to that unity of the local universe capital, and it's like, well, we've washed out all the individuality. No, you've just, you know, washed out the mortal and Marantia individuality, you know, basically, immediate stuff, and now you have the higher differential that, you know, you have to work on. So, you know, spirit or unity is always a relative thing, like we've said. I mean, even in the super universe of Orvinton, it's a downstepped expression of unity. It's not the unity at the central universe level. It's, you know, it's like 1/7 of it, you know, if you will. You know, but then they say, well, what happens when we're all perfect? Well, you still have task ahead of you because you've ascended to perfection, but you still have to penetrate to completion, that second half of your finite career, when you're God the Supreme seeking, you know, heading towards seventh stage spirit status, like they said. So, you know, look at what's, you know, what they bring up there. You know, when you're functioning at that high level, you're beginning to have insight that transcends the finite. See, that bit about the paradise residents, you know, being confronted with the necessity of adjusting to that absinite differential. Right? You know, you start to get up towards the ceiling there in terms of how you're manifesting finitely. That means your insight, which is transcendent of your sight, you know, is beginning to have a, you know, a measure of absonity in it. And so, well, what would that be like? What would this absinite differential that they're talking about here? Well, the absinite is transcendent of the finite, so it only relates to the finite holistically. Okay. You're a finaliter on the Isle of Paradise. Are you complete? Do you encompass the whole? No, that's what you're penetrating to completion. See, that's how the absonity and the transcendence of the absinite to the finite. You know, you're still very partial, not complete. And so you still have this absonite differential. And finally, when the whole ground universe is settled in light and life, we all, you know, have that relationship to that holistic footprint of the absonite on the finite. You know, and then it starts all over again, right? Beyond that. But see, so that's that bit that you're incomplete is that absonite differential that they're talking about there. Completeness would be the leveling off of that absonite differential. A full relationship to the whole grand universe. All right. There you have it. Like they said at the end there, and this is the story. You know, and you can see why they threw in that little, that last little thing, the kind of that little poetic flourish at the end. I mean, it is a pretty grand story, this paper. That kind of deserves a little artistic flourish at the end, you know, a little fine. All right, so let's reflect on that, and next time we'll move into the local system.